This is John Davidson saying, if you don't listen to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, you are missing something. Now that's incredible.
Welcome, listeners, to yet another supersized summer rerun. This time we are throwing it way, way back to episode 56, which I don't think we've ever replayed. Do you guys? I don't think we have.
I don't think so.
I don't think we have either. And really it's one of my favorites.
I know. It's a really fun episode. It's called Living in a TV Dream Home. And in this episode, oh my gosh, not only do we share all of the different great TV homes and sets that we remember growing up, we each share our very favorite. So that's worth sticking around for, right? And they're all, yeah, they're
TV
all
home
really
would
different.
You want to live in.
Yeah, they are.
They're
really
totally different. And I think this is significant because, and I'm sure we do say this in the episode, but what we never stop to think about is that our TVs contain so many different examples of home. Right? It's right. So interesting. It's not like reading a book or going to a movie. You don't think about homes from books you've read or homes from movies that you've seen. It's really unique to TV because so much of what we were watching were shows about families. And if you have a show about a family, they have to live in a house. And that becomes sort of a like a little shopping spree for us. Mm-hmm. We get to imagine ourselves in different homes. There's an article, a very cool article that I found called The Homes of Characters We Love or Love to Hate Remain Places That We Visit Over and Over Again by Fanny Montalvo. She's actually a real estate broker. I just think this is some really interesting information. And she points out, I'm going to quote her here. Since the earliest days of television, homes on the small screen, from the suburban ranch with its white picket fence to the loft with its views of the city skyline, have shaped our reality and our desires. No mm-hmm. joke, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We start imagining what kind of life we want to lead based on the homes that these characters live in. And she points out that even the different styles of TV lend itself to different styles of homes. And the first one, of course, is the classic family sitcom. And she said it started really with I Love Lucy. I Love Lucy, Lucy and Ricky lived in an apartment on the Upper West Side of Manhattan until they moved to the suburbs of Connecticut, which is also what everybody was doing at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. When all of New York started moving to Connecticut, so did Lucy and Ricky. But advertisers realized that people were starting to analyze Lucy and Ricky's apartment, and a furniture company actually made a replica of Lucy and Ricky's bedroom set and offered it for sale in an advertisement during I Love Lucy.
Wow.
Brilliant.
Did that many couples sleep in separate beds back then?
That's a really good question, Carolyn, because they make it sound like it's one bed.
Okay.
I thought this article was interesting in that she was talking about how the different decades influenced it. Like in the 70s, that was very messy and real and imperfect. So you get something like All in the Family or Sanford and Son or something like that.
That was the reality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was. And then the 80s, we move into the 80s being defined by glamour and excess, like Dallas and Knott's Landing. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the 90s, and that excess has become a punchline, she said. And viewers wanted to see homes where real people might live, like ordinary people of all realities. It could be gay characters or single parent families. And then as the decade moved on, groups of single friends, like friends, right?
Hello.
So yeah. The homes and the places they gathered all reflected that. So there was much more to that, you know, how the sausage was made than we were just seeing. We're like, oh, I love that house. But actually, it was very intentional, I think. Is what she's saying.
Oh, I think so. And so influential. I remember in the 90s, what was my favorite color? It was periwinkle. And I had never in my life had a favorite color so hard. I love that color so,
look at her
so
fingernails
hard.
Right now.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I do have periwinkle fingernails right now.
She has periwinkle fingernails, you guys.
Does. Well, why do you think I had – why did I love periwinkle so much?
Because of
the Friends apartment, of course. Mm-hmm. And everybody's style was sort of leaning into that sort of bohemian chic, right? And we didn't know we could have purple walls mm-hmm. until Rachel and Monica did.
Do you remember – I remember – watching TV with my kids. And so I'm talking about a lot of the Disney shows, like the Hannah Montanas mm-hmm. or the, you know, Wizards of Waverly Place and all these kind of shows. And everything was an explosion of color. Like the kitchen cabinets were teal and the wall was green. And I was so into that. I was like, I never would do that myself, but I loved looking at it and pausing the TV and being like, how does that all go together? But that looks so cool. So it's kind of an escape for you too, especially getting out of the decor style.
It's almost a form of your own creativity. Even if you're not adopting it yourself, you're allowed to embrace it
in somebody
else's home, right?
Right.
I even love, they even talk about Star Trek in this article. This is just so fascinating. They said, and as we all know, in the mid-60s we know that as the atomic age. And we had TV shows to reflect that, like Star Trek and Lost in Space. She says, the awe-inspiring prospect of space travel was brought into daily life with these TV shows and made it familiar and fun. And again, I'm quoting here. On television, spaceships became a shinier version of the traditional sitcom living room.
Yes. I remember Lost in Space was one of my favorite shows when I was little. So I couldn't tell you much about any of the plots of any of the episodes. But I can tell you how cool I thought it was that they had this like flying saucer spaceship that they lived in. It was just so cool. And I can still see it, like them standing outside of it. I'm closing my eyes, listeners, and I'm just imagining
everyone.
It.
She's concentrating so hard.
But yeah, and we've talked about, you just kind of said that, but yeah.
We've talked about the I Dream of Jeannie bottle, too, how much we all loved that. Oh, my gosh. Thing.
Star Trek in particular, she says, the interior of the Starship Enterprise, the bridge's swivel chairs in blue plastic and the captain's imposing black leather armchair, the bold flat colors, the orange upholstery in the captain's quarters embodied a particular mod chic modernity that soon found its way into interior design. It was pushing out all of the things from the 50s, the plaid and the flounces. Star Trek was changing interior design.
What do you think about that?
Carolyn is gobsmacked. So I have to ask you guys, do you have any influences or specific items in your own homes right now that you can attribute to homes of TV shows you've watched?
Oh my gosh, I'm sitting in one right now. Like if I could show you my podcasting studio, my office, my attic studio here is a combination of Mary Tyler Moore's apartment and Greg Brady's attic bedroom. That's
Is that a match made in heaven or what?
I know. It really is. I've got an orange carpet. I've got an orange bean bag. I've got my record player up here. I have an orange couch. Yes, I do. It's all swirly and psychedelic.
A goat.
Yeah. I wish I had a goat.
Well, I was going to share with you guys, we have several things that we own specifically because of a television show we watched, and I Googled and Googled until I found the exact thing. All of them are vessels to drink out of. Shocking. Years ago in 2.5 Men, the OG, when it was like in its first few seasons, Brian and I loved 2.5 Men. That was appointment TV for us. And Brian fell in love with the coffee mugs that they were always drinking out of. Charlie was always drinking out of, and it's a striped coffee mug. And I found them and got them for him for Christmas. And what's so funny is this was years ago, but when you Googled 2.5 Men coffee mug, they all came up and they were selling, not like from the CBS store that, you know, then it says 2.5 Men on the bottom, but it's kind of like a, I don't know. It's a ceramic mug. I should put a picture in the Weekly Reader this week.
Yeah, please do, because I want to see it.
We still have these coffee mugs, and they're still some of our very favorite coffee mugs. Two of them have little chips out of them, and it kills us. But I was watching a rerun not that long ago, a few months ago, and I was like, look, they've got our coffee mugs. The second is then when we got into Scandal, like millions of other people, we had to have the Camille red wine glasses from Crate and Barrel, because that's the wine glass Olivia Pope always drank from at the end of the night. It's a giant globe. It's like a fishbowl. And she would glug, 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 glug her wine in it at the end. And they're, you can still buy them at Crate and Barrel. I never drink out of them because they're giant. And then the third one I just gave to my husband for Christmas, like year before last, I rewatched the entire series of Mad Men with him because he had never seen it. And I love Mad Men. And my husband's a whiskey drinker. And one of the glasses that Don Draper always drinks his whiskey out of, that he keeps in his office, I found a set, and they're just like a small little globe, and they have like silver around the top. So
I know
very,
what you're talking about. Yes.
That kind of very 60s looking. And what's funny is
atomic.
I've stolen two of them and I use them as wine glasses, but yeah. So three things specifically that we were like, we must have those. It's not as much the style, but it was things that we saw, you know, them using that we had to have.
Well, and that makes me think of, especially as a kid watching these shows and looking at the TV homes and observing those kind of items, like the things that were on the dresser or hanging on their walls. They weren't part of the storyline, but you felt like it was, you were learning something. It was kind of intimate. And I think my little brain when I was younger, I mean, I knew the Bradys weren't real people, but at the same time in my brain, they might have been kind of realish people.
Oh, so yeah. Did we know? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean
it's maybe gray.
Exactly. It's gray. So you felt like, oh my gosh, I'm looking at that poster on the wall, or, you know, particularly in their rooms or in the bathroom, sometimes not even paying attention to what was happening in the screen with the characters, but looking around and feeling like I was getting this extra level of intimacy with these characters and knowing, you know, more about them. And I just loved doing that.
Yeah. But I think you have a really good point, Carolyn, about it adds another level of intimacy. Mm-hmm. You get to relate to these characters on a more intimate level by understanding all of the cookbooks that they use or the toothbrush that they use or the books on their shelf. And that's something that takes place subliminally. You don't even know that you're doing it, really.
Right.
And so that elevates the importance of the set designer.
Yeah, it really does. And that's why those people go to school for that. I mean, there is a whole science behind behind the whole set design world. And that's why they have categories in the Academy Awards and Emmy Awards specifically for set design.
Yeah.
And it's everything from those little things that we don't, like you said, Kristen, it's almost subliminal. We don't even know that we notice, but we are absorbing it and then kind of helping us flesh out who these characters are a little bit more.
And who we are in relation. Like once Michelle said, when you asked the question, do you have anything? And I was like, well, except for my attic. No, I don't think so. But then when you said glassware, all of the glassware they used on Friends I had in my home. Literally. Right? The tumblers that had the blue, the Mexican blue.
Oh, yeah,
at the top.
We had those too.
Oh, gosh, we had those.
The tall water glasses that were all cobalt blue. Everything was cobalt blue.
Oh, yeah, everything was cobalt. Those were all my wedding gifts. But here's my question.
Chicken or the egg?
Yeah, chicken or the egg.
Yeah. One of our followers recently posted about finding the mugs from Brady Bunch.
It's Susie who's helping design the Brady Bunch.
Yes, and it was such a coup.
Yeah.
And these mugs are so – we had them in our home too. So to find the Brady Bunch mugs would be so important on many levels, not just from a Brady Bunch standpoint, but from my own personal standpoint. I want that mug too.
Right.
Yeah. All of these things make us feel at home, both with our TV characters and in our own homes. And so I hope you enjoy this episode where we're really talking about the TV homes that meant the most to us. And we hope to hear from you too. Let us know which ones you like the best.
So here we go with episode 56, Living in a TV Dream Home.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard.
But I have the perfect idea. I say we have a PCPS meetup and sleep over there. You guys, right? We're
no
not
itching powder though.
No one's paying.
Yeah. My brother's not allowed anywhere near the set.
That's right.
We're gonna like, there's gonna be like ghosts out in the trees.
Hello world, it's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who sang Ding Dong, Avon every time the doorbell rang.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the houses of our TV families, the ones we dreamed of living in ourselves. Which one was your favorite? I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists. Do you guys have any plans this weekend?
I have big plans to stay home by myself.
Crickets.
Big plans to stay home by yourself.
Yeah, and I couldn't be happier. I'm loving it.
We're so excited. I have that next
the crew
weekend.
Is going on a a little up north vacation to do some skiing. And darn it, I couldn't go. So, you know, I'll just have to stay here by myself with the whole house to myself, I guess.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I'll be thinking about you.
You know what? I have that next weekend. Well, it's just my husband and I now anyway, but I have that next weekend and I started watching a movie, just a little silly Netflix rom-com. The other night, you know, it was like a new movie. I'm like, oh, this looks cute. I started watching it and I immediately thought, no, save it for your girls' weekend. Yes. And by girls' weekend, I mean just me.
Alone. That's so funny because that's exactly what I think of. What am I going to watch? Mm-hmm. I don't have to negotiate with anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't have to try and marry our two TV watching philosophies, mm-hmm. which are vastly different. And I just feel like, fine, we'll watch this again.
Yes, we'll have fun. I'll be putting my nose to the grindstone, editing and,
now I feel bad.
Yes.
Tiny violin.
It never stops.
Get them out for it's, Carolyn.
Although that is true. It never stops so for Carolyn.
No, it doesn't. No.
Yeah, nothing stops for me. Not my brain, not my, I don't know, urine sometimes. Just a lot of things don't stop.
Well, that's interesting, Carolyn, that you say that. Is that actually true? Like, could this nonstop editing, does this work well with the way that your brain operates?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. And I was actually just talking to my chiropractor, of all things, about this because we were commenting on how long I sit sometimes. And I said, well, what happens is I get in this groove. So I'm editing. It's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle kind of thing. And if I haven't shared before, my brain has a little ADD going on. And so I can either be totally everywhere or I can hyper-focus and just be mm-hmm. in the zone. But once I kind of get out of the zone for a second, it's really hard to get back in the mm-hmm. zone. So when I'm editing, I could be sitting there for 2.5 hours and I don't even know that 2.5 hours have gone by.
Wow.
But of course, that's not really healthy to sit when you've got lower back pain and you're going to the chiropractor. It's like, you can't sit for 2.5 hours. And I was explaining, gosh, well, it has to be a really little move so that my brain doesn't even realize I'm doing anything differently, or I'll get out of that space that's really a productive space for me.
Yeah.
So.
What about those standing desks? Have you ever seen those?
Well, I do have, I don't have the actual standing desk, but I do have a little setup that I do that's mm-hmm. like that. And then she said, maybe I could sit on, she said, do you have an exercise ball?
I know.
And I said, mm-hmm. I think I do in our basement. I don't know if it's mm-hmm. still inflated.
Ours is like deflated. Yeah.
Yeah. And she said, well, you can sit on that because even just, you know,
just
the
bouncing.
Muscles you use.
Well, just bouncing.
Thought, yeah. But then what if I hit the wrong thing and delete something?
Thinking about it, that might work because, you know, how for some people it's easier to pay attention when you're doing something else like knitting or embroidery or something like that. And it could be that stabilizing yourself on the ball is the doing something else.
Have you ever seen me on those balls?
I would love to see. Could we see video though of Carolyn trying to edit while she's on the ball? She just keeps rolling off to the side,
right.
rolling backwards. Like, her feet just fly up.
Like some bad words as I'm toppling over and then the mm-hmm. computer falls over. I don't know. I'm going to experiment with a few things because, yeah, I've had some back issues, and I got this thing called a wobble chair. I'd almost pulled it up, but I'm not going to move.
Oh, I've
of my
seen
setup.
It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
tell and it's us more.
It probably could be a little more
it
than
sounds kind of naughty.
Anyway, yeah, it. Well, not for me. I mean, naughty in that I curse when I'm on
yeah,
it because
exactly.
I kind of fall off, and it's kind of a pain. But anyway, I digress.
Do you as guys I remember in college? Did you have those? Chairs at your word processors where it was like a chair that was slanted forward and then your knees would go on little pads in front of you.
My daughter has one. We just got it for her.
Do they still make them?
Yeah, they still make it. There's no back to it. It's just a pad
yes.
and it slants forward. And the reason we got it for her is during COVID when she goes to college, just for those of you listening, my daughter is a, she's a junior in college. That's crazy. And everything was remote. So she was at home for basically a year. So sitting at her desk, taking classes all day long and her back was killing her. And the way that she realized that she sat on her chair was with her knees drawn up a lot to her, like up.
That's what
or she sat like, and so her back was killing her. And so we got her that chair and she loves it. And so you almost sit and yeah, your knees, your like weight is kind of on your knees.
Your knees
like
you fall over yeah. and it scares
me. We got it on Amazon. Mm-hmm.
I'm totally getting one. I'm totally getting one because I cannot find a good way to sit. And I was shopping.
And you can't slouch really in it either.
You can't slouch.
All right.
Well, maybe good.
I'll try one of those.
We should. I'm just going to come borrow yours and we'll see how
it goes. You can do a trial.
She left it here. She doesn't. She didn't take it to college with her. So it's here.
We'll pass it around. We'll each try it and then we'll give our grade.
Mm-hmm. Sounds
we'll
good.
We'll call it the 1986 word processor chair.
Yeah.
Okay, are you guys ready to talk about your TV dream homes?
Oh my gosh, of course.
Let's do it.
Buckle up.
Buckle up.
A house is a very, very, very fine house.
Every time you watch TV, the people in the show have to live somewhere. And it's only natural that after spending time with them each and every week, sometimes for your entire childhood, that the homes those people lived in start to become as familiar as the characters themselves. Did you have a TV house you loved? A place you yourself wanted to live? Possibly with the TV family still in it? If you did, it's cool to know that someone agonized over that set. They decided what style it should be. They picked out the furniture. They toiled over the exact right accessories. That was someone's life's work. And it was important because the result could be that it would live in someone's heart forever.
Oh, and it indeed. Does.
What a fun job, too, don't you think?
Right.
I know.
Yes, so I think, but really stressful. I don't know that I could handle that kind of stress. I would be agonizing over like two accessories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do I do and these so much glass grapes in blue or green, you know?
That is an actual situation that happened.
Yes.
Should I get the glass grapes in the orange or the green?
That was in the forefront of my mind because it literally just happened when the three of us were in a vintage store late fall and Kristen could not decide on a set of glass grapes. Right.
And the orange was the proper choice.
It was the proper choice, especially for your house, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, I think the home is so vital to our memories of these TV shows. You can't separate them, really, because I don't know about you guys, but I often remember details of the homes way more clearly than I do the series. Like if you say a series went on for 8 years that we loved, sure, I might remember an episode here and there, but I'm going to remember everything that was in that kitchen or everything that was in that on that coffee table.
Yeah, those homes, kind of like you said, Kristen, they're almost like another character. I mean, that's how they almost breathe. They live so much in our memories that way. And again, like you said, the time and the effort that go into choosing everything from the exterior, what it's going to look like, to the interior shots, to every little thing that's hanging on the wall, it is an enormous task. And so right now, I want to just do a quick little evolution of TV homes with you guys and how what we see now has kind of come to be. Because originally, shows like I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke, those were filmed, as we remember, in front of live audiences often in a studio. So those were all sometimes within like a big building. There would just be different little studio sets within those. But then during the 50s, some of the film production companies out in LA started to realize that this TV thing was maybe going to take off and they wanted to get in on it. So they developed kind of television arms out of their movie studios. And because of that, they had large studio lots. Because they'd been producing films on there. So now they could have these television shows produced also on these big lots, and they could in turn have exterior shots. They could have outside shots. Before that, everything was inside, and now we can be outside. So,
I mean, think about that. We don't know where Lucy and Ricky lived.
Right.
We never saw the outside. Whereas when you watch Friends, they show the outside of the building before every scene begins. We never saw the outside of Lucy and Ricky's building.
We didn't. And did we ever see the outside of the Dick Van Dyke show house?
No, never.
We did.
Mm-mm. No, we didn't. And so now these large studios, they could even have a whole neighborhood, a whole of suburban streets that they could incorporate. So now all of a sudden, Leave It to Beaver doesn't have to take place just in a studio with interior shots. We can go walking down the sidewalk with Leave It to Beaver. We can go into town with Leave It to Beaver. Hazel was another one of the first shows that was able to have exterior shots. And because these studios basically had space to create these scenes. So some of the studios you might recognize the names of, we had Columbia Films, which is now Warner Brothers. And they were one of the first studios that incorporated a television arm. Their huge back lot is known as the Ranch. The Ranch
features such iconic TV homes as Darren and Samantha Stevens' house from Bewitched, the houses from I Dream of Jeannie and the Partridge Family. And also, the ranch has probably what is the most famous water feature in TV history.
What?
I know. Well, it's that fountain from the opening of Friends that is located on the lot, the ranch lot. So they did reuse a lot of the sets, especially the exteriors. Another back lot that we're probably all familiar with is the Universal back lot. So that was another film company in the 50s that had started to produce television shows. And their kind of suburban street where their houses are located, it's called Colonial Street. And this is where you'd find the homes of the Munsters, the Cleavers.
Well, one thing that's so interesting about when you do those tours, because we also had done the Universal tour, and it's so interesting that it's truly just the shell. It's just the front of the house. Right. It's just the exterior. It's not a cardboard cut out of a house, but it almost is. Like if you walk through the front door, there's nothing in there, but they're just facades.
And yet people still have to come out the door, right? Like a lot of the exterior scenes are people coming out of the house. So they're just going through a facade. I swear I can see Keith Partridge coming out.
Oh, you can.
Front door.
I'm going to say because they would put up what they called an L wall. Stevens house is another example of that, and probably the Partridge Family. So it was just behind the front door. So it looked like there was something beyond that. So you could open the front door. Truly, there wasn't the rest of the house, but there was this kind of makeshift wall that made it appear that there was
an interior.
So it
didn't look like there was a mountain in their house or something.
Correct, or a bunch of, because yes, there are a lot of facades, and then they do have some of the homes where they'll have like the other three walls and a roof, but there's nothing inside. They use it for storage of like light fixtures and that kind of thing.
Weird.
So they don't
That actually... makes me feel bad. I don't like that.
There are some things. Yeah, you learn to make you feel bad, a little bad.
What Didn't it say? Drive you crazy, though, when you would see like an exterior establishing shot of the house? I'm just thinking right now of like the Cosby Show. So you'd see like the exterior, the Huxtables, almost like a brownstone. And then you would immediately be inside and they're all in the living room. And I would always be going, okay, so that window, so wait a minute. Like I would be picturing what I just saw as the exterior. And then I'd be trying to figure out where everything was. And if it didn't match up, drove me crazy. And it didn't match up often, like in houses where you would see the exterior. And then when it would be the interior, you're going, wait, that's not where that window is, or that doesn't make sense. There's no way the upstairs could go that way. And you think someone's job is... That's all they had to do. All they had to do was to build the inside. If they say this is the outside house, this is what we want their house to be. Now someone needs to make the inside set look like that could actually be inside that house. And they failed.
Right.
It's like the person on the Little House on the Prairie set whose job it was to say braids when Laura's braids were in front when they were supposed to be in back. They should have had a person who could pick that out. Right.
Yeah, I think Karen Grassley told us it was the script supervisor, because I was like, I want to be that person. I want to be that person who says, you guys, if this is the outside, there's no way. That window then needs to be on the other side of the room or whatever.
Do they think people don't notice that? And for the two studios that we just talked about that had the, you know, they were obviously creating the facade. Why can't they just, you know, create the home behind it to correspond? They had that option. But Paramount Studios, again, another film studio in the 50s that developed television shows, their lot was not that big in LA that they had. So to create these exterior scenes for homes, they would actually go to surrounding neighborhoods and find a home that they thought would represent the Brady Bunch, for example. So that home is not located on a lot. That's a real person's home. It's located at 11222 Dilling Street. The Cunningham's home is another one that's just a few blocks from Paramount, and that's obviously from Happy Days. We've got the Clampett's Mansion from Beverly Hillbillies is in Bel Air.
Oh, that's real?
Yep, that is.
Oh, that's interesting. So there's an address for the Clampett's house.
There is. And there's a website that gives you all of those addresses that you can go if you want to do actual tours. I tried to look up because Family was another one, because you've stood in front of that house, Kristen.
Yep.
I was trying to see if it was a Paramount production, and I couldn't find that before we met today. But that's another example that that home was not very far. I mean, obviously, you were there. And people still go like Kristen and stand in front of some poor family's home that's just trying to eat their breakfast.
Get your picture taken.
Oh, God, I'd do that in a hot second.
That's right.
Oh, I actually went up to a house that did not go in the Cosby set. And I went up to the door and had my picture taken opening the door just because it looked like the Cosby house. It wasn't even the Cosby's house. But I'm like, it's close enough.
There's a creepy lady at our door. Uh-huh.
That was me, the creepy lady.
It's funny you bring that up because perhaps one of the most iconic homes is located not very far from us. It is Mary Richards' home from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And that was in Minneapolis and still is.
So many of us dreamed of living in some of these houses. And we decided to ask our society members which TV house they would want to be their dream home. And without even counting the votes, we know exactly which classic TV home you all want to live in. If you grew up in the 70s or the 80s, the TV home you fell in love with and knew so intimately was the Brady Bunch house. Mm-hmm. We know because we feel exactly the same way. We all wanted to live in that house.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, the Brady Bunch house is so beloved, and we have so much to say about it, and it is just such an icon of 1970s architecture and design that it deserves its very own episode. And don't worry, you guys, it will have one in an upcoming season. You guys, at this rate, I think we're going to have like 187 seasons.
I know, it's true.
We keep having all these great ideas, and we have already like planned a season, and we're like, well, next season, next season. And then we think of other things. Anyway, but the actual house at 11222 Dilling Street actually did get its own series on HGTV just a couple of years ago. And I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir with our society, but for those of you who don't know, when that actual house, the one that was used for all the exterior shots, when it went up for sale, it looked like Brady Bunch superfan and NSYNC singer Lance Bass, which I think that surprised a lot of us.
I love this so much.
Yeah. He was going to buy it. But HGTV outbid him and bought the house for $3.5 million in August 2018. And yes, Lance Bass was terribly disappointed. But
that made me love him so much more.
I know.
Yes, like he's one of us.
Well, he could be like my child, I think. But it all worked out for him because I think he ended up being like some sort of producer on the show. So he still has a connection to it. And he still, you know, cha-ching, made some money from that. So, and then in November of 2018, HGTV began production on a very Brady renovation where all six Brady kids came together and worked alongside some of HGTV's stars to transform that home into the replica of the original Paramount Stage 5 set. And they did. It was insanely detailed and just so impressive. They completed that renovation. It was just in May of 2019, and the show premiered in September of 2019. And you guys watched it, right?
Oh, God, yes.
I couldn't wait for that.
I know.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. And both Mike and me. I mean, it's so funny when somebody that is not normally as nostalgic about the same things as you are is right on the couch there like, we have to see if they got the bathroom done. Like, he's just so excited.
But the show appealed to everybody, though, because they had to actually reconstruct that house. Like I was just saying before, drives me crazy how many exteriors look nothing. Like, it's not possible for the interior to match that exterior. The Brady Bunch house was one of them. And it wasn't possible for everything that was in that house to belong to the same exterior. But by gum, HGTV did it. And they did it with a whole bunch of construction. But it's so fascinating. Each episode, it featured a different pairing of Brady kids working with HGTV designers and builders. And they went out searching for the exact props or recreating the fabrics. That one was so interesting with Marsha, with Maureen McCormick.
I love that one.
The fabric for the sofa. Or they even, like I just said, they had to build sections of the home to make it exact, even the backyard. And it's crazy how perfect it ended up. If you happen to not watch it, don't worry. You can follow Very Brady Renovation still on Instagram for the fun videos, and all the reveals are still there. And you can still stream it on a variety of streaming platforms. And as for that, the new completely replicated Brady'd out house, it's kind of sad. Its future kind of remains unclear. One woman won a contest and got to stay there for a week with her husband. And can you imagine? What would you do? I would dress the part too.
I would come with all 70s clothes.
Oh, I would. I would like want to use the little tiny coffee cups. Like, their coffee cups have like four sips of coffee in them. Because they're so small.
They're green. I've looked for them online. I want them. They're green with those little like ovals on them. I can't find them.
I would sit on those, like those two chairs, you know, in the living room and read the paper, or I would like needlepoint like Carol did. Like I would do everything they did, I think, if I was going to be there for it. Anyway, they've given some celebrities private tours since, but you guys, they can't really open it to the public because of all the zoning laws in the neighborhood, because it's a neighborhood. So they can't make it an Airbnb. They can't make it like a museum. It's a neighborhood, so it's kind of unfortunate. But I have the perfect idea. We have a PCPS meetup and sleep over there. You guys, right?
We're not itching powder, though.
No one's paying.
My brother's not allowed anywhere near the set. That's right.
There's gonna be like ghosts out in the trees. Woo! We're not gonna charge anybody. We're just gonna say, come on over. We just gotta arrange it with HGTV. But I think that would be like a really, really cool place.
Bring some records and your transistor radio. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe if
no playing actually, ball in the house though, everyone.
No.
If we did charge, we could do it like a fundraiser. And then maybe HGTV would feel, you know, good about it. Like, let them come. Everyone pays $150 to have a PCPS sleepover, and then we donate whatever to some worthy cause.
Somebody out there has to have a connection. So hear us now. Yeah. You know what? You guys, a couple episodes ago, we talked about our vision boards. I'm adding this to mine. Something will happen PCPS related in that replicated Brady house.
I want to be inside. A picture outside will not suffice this time.
No.
I have to be inside.
No, yeah. We will be inside for a long time. We will sleep there.
Yeah.
Well, can the three of us get the girls' rooms, though? Everybody else can the three of us get the girls' rooms? Can I have Cindy's bed over against the wall?
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, thanks.
Yes, and I'll lean out. Oh, I don't want to be Jan, but...
I'll be Jan. Okay. I'm Jan.
You get the window, where you get the window bed.
You look out, you know, when you dropped your necklace into the...
Oh, my necklace!
When you were looking for the bear for or Fluffy? Whatever in the...
Wasn't it looking for Fluffy?
Oh, you were looking up in the sky. I thought you were looking at like a constellation or something.
I thought you were looking at a constellation.
Okay.
That's what I thought it was,
too. That's so like me.
Yeah.
And then she recreates the evening and she screams when she realizes, oh, my neck fell in the bush. That's
right. It's Ursa Minor. No, is it Ursa Minor?
Yeah, she doesn't just scream. It's like a howl. It's like I mean, it wakes everybody up. Everybody comes running from all around the house. What? The boys come in. Of course, when the boys come in, though, they're tying their bathrobes. Because you don't go from one room to another.
You can't come out of your room without your bathrobe.
Those Brady's do their bathrobes. I tell you, I thought
everybody. You born in a barn?
Yeah, really. Bathrobes. Those were a big thing in that show. Everyone had a bathrobe at the end of their bed.
Yeah, well, I bet it was censorship stuff because, you know, there couldn't be a toilet in that bathroom because of the censor. So there couldn't
because people
couldn't
don't
show
pee.
A toilet. No, yeah. Right.
No peeing. Mm-hmm. Well, I loved that. What would you call it? The TV room. You know, that room off the kitchen
the
den.
Oh, no, what it's you not call
Mike's. Mike's.
Oh, that's. Yeah, Mike's. You're right.
I just called it the family room. That's like a family. Like. You know, there's like a fan, like the living room is always more like the formal living room. Mm-hmm. The family room is where the family hangs out and watches TV in our house, at least. So I always think of that
as
the family room.
Mike works in the den.
And they had those really cool plaid.
That's what I wanted. Those plaid L couches that like, I think they actually became single size twin beds. Like you could pull them out.
Okay.
Like
well,
there
then,
was
then we're
in the,
a lot of space for PCPS people to sleep.
Oh, this is true. That's right. And they can sleep outside because the weather's always nice. You know, we
on the AstroTurf?
Yeah, on the AstroTurf in a pup tent.
And Tiger's Doghouse.
Bring your own AstroTurf.
Or Tiger's Doghouse, yeah. That would work.
Hello, listeners. If you've been listening for the past few months, you know that I've been experimenting with a new clothing rental membership from Armoire. After the pandemic, I fell into the routine of pretty much not getting dressed at all. Ever. I basically had nighttime pajamas and daytime pajamas, and it was a habit that was so hard to break when it was time to start leaving our houses again. Was I comfortable? Yes, but did I look like me? Not really. That's where I thought Armoire might be helpful for me. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. My membership has helped me build a better wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and look a lot more like me than my pajamas did. Is comfort still a priority? 100%. That's one of the things I'm learning as I experiment with new styles. There are clothes out there that feel like pajamas, but I still look like I got dressed in the morning. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle, and I want to talk to you about my post-menopause symptoms. TMI? Not with this audience. Listen, for what seems like 92 years, I've been waking up in the night with a wet pajama top. I know a lot of you know that feeling. I've experienced mood swings, bloating, racing thoughts. Basically, I've felt like I'm living in a body that's not mine. But I'm so happy to report that all of that is changing since I started taking Hormone Harmony. I've noticed a huge improvement in all of those things I just listed. And you guys, I've even weaned off the hormone patches I've worn for the past 6 years. And I'm not the only one who's loving it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And there are over 17,000 reviews where women mention that Hormone Harmony has helped them feel like themselves again. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today. Don't you want to feel like yourself again?
Recently, I was visiting Michelle in Denver, and you guys, I was so impressed how seriously she takes the meals that she makes for her new dog.
It's true. Yeah. Our pup Frankie is a 2-year-old Australian cattle dog mixed rescue. And since I imagine she probably ate nothing but weeds on the farm she came from, I want to give her the best and tastiest nutrition possible. And that's why I feel so good about giving Frankie Badlands Ranch. Actress Katherine Heigl, she's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation. She says she's seeing more issues with dogs' health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health, their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs, and it's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And bonus, Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason DeBus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes, just like Frankie. And I'm here to tell you, Frankie loves it and gets so excited when she sees me reach for the bag.
We have a great offer that we are excited to share with all of our dog parent listeners. Go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS today.
Did you know that the Pop Culture Preservation Society is on Patreon? Patreon allows you to support our work by becoming dues-paying members of our society. We are an independent, women-run endeavor with a commitment to delivering the highest quality listening experience to our community. And so we've taught ourselves how to record, edit, and produce a podcast in midlife, a time when most of us are asking our kids how to regram a TikTok, so that we can deliver episodes that truly speak to you. Support from PCPS patrons means that we can devote more of our time and resources to the content, sources, equipment, software, hosting, and research that you've come to depend on without worrying about how to pay the bills. So thank you. We appreciate you from the bottom of our bell-bottomed hearts.
Okay, you guys, now it's time to share our favorite TV home with our listeners. You know, the one that you could imagine yourself living in and waking up in and eating breakfast in. So if you were going to come and knock on my door.
Come and knock on my door.
It's not that one, though,
someone
right?
Can't sing that without me repeating it.
Yeah. You can't sing that. Sing it. But, so yeah, if you were going to come and knock on my door of my favorite TV home, you would be at 1164 Morning Glory Circle. At the home of Samantha and Darren Stevens from Bewitched.
good house.
I love that house.
I have loved that home my entire life. And I never really knew why. I just knew I wanted, as I said, to wake up in there. I wanted to eat breakfast in that kitchen. I wanted to be friends with Tabitha. It gives me this warm feeling, this just warm, comfy feeling every time I think of it. And it wasn't until we were doing research for this episode that I thought I need to dig into why I feel that way. And so I watched some episodes, looked through some videos, and I gotta say, I think one of the big selling points was that this home had not one, but two sets of stairs.
Oh,
and
yes,
when right. you live in a mm-hmm. ranch house in Houston, Texas, all you want is stairs. You think that you have made it
true.
If you have an upper floor. So the fact that you could go upstairs from not only the entryway, but also the kitchen, oh my gosh, this was over the top house.
Carolyn, can I just tell you that yes. I had the same experience because I lived in a ranch house in California. And when we moved to Minnesota, not only was I getting stairs, I was getting two sets of stairs.
Wow.
I mean, it was almost too much.
Yeah,
it was too much.
It's mm-hmm. it. And
you
I think
must have
that's
felt like you guys were like super wealthy. Like I would have felt oh
rich.
My God, Dad, are you president?
Yes.
Mayor of Minnesota?
I'm the mayor of Minnesota.
I'm so glad I'm not alone mm-hmm. with that because somehow mm-hmm. I thought that stairs equaled wealth. Like
yes.
you had stairs, you were rich and didn't have a care
absolutely.
In the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It
yeah.
was it was wonderful. So that second set of stairs, you guys, I mean, stairs came down in the kitchen. Okay. You could just come down from your bedroom and come into that fun, fun kitchen. So that is another place I think I fell in love with that home. Not only it had these really cool, like shuttered bifold doors that separated kind of the bar pass through mm-hmm. into the dining room. And I thought
yeah.
that was really neat. Like you could have a really messy kitchen, but shut those and you could entertain and no one would have to see that your kitchen was messy. I mean, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty ingenious.
Yes, I really mm-hmm. love that. Mm-hmm. But that we're just going to take a moment. We're just going to sit for a second. We're going to talk about that kitchen because it was pretty darn cool. Okay. It had, well, obviously the magic that she would do in there, but almost a magical appliance.
You know, the magic.
The magic.
Obviously.
Yeah. There mm-hmm. is the coolest oven range setup in that kitchen that looks magical, but it is real. It is the Frigidaire Flare electric range.
You found it?
Oh, yeah. And you too could find one and buy it for your kitchen if you wanted now for a little over $12,500.
Oh, okay.
But at the time, this was indeed a product, and product placement was actually a big deal on Bewitched. So Frigidaire is getting a nice little plug-in. But do you guys remember this the range stove situation?
Was it one on top of the other?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Well, it was really cool in that it had the oven part had these like window doors that kind of opened up. That was on the top.
Oh, yeah.
And then it had like storage for all your pots and pans kind of underneath. So they didn't have a built-in oven into the wall like we might see in another favorite TV home, but you could see everything. It was at eye level, and then you could be cooking down right below it. So everything was kind of in this one place. And then they also had like this, they had a fireplace in there, a brick fireplace in their kitchen, which again, talk about cozy and homey and maybe Little House
and witchy.
Vibes.
It's kind of witchy.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. there you go.
Yeah.
And there was like, she could have cooked on it, but I never actually saw her using it to cook. It, to me, it was just kind of a fun.
For when Mr. Tate was coming over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So kitchen, I loved. And then above all of that, though, as I really went back and looked, I think it was the exterior of that home. They did spend a lot of time outside. The backyard had a gazebo in it. I mean, it looked
like
a fun That's place right. to hang out. There was a really nice patio with some really nice patio furniture. And at that point in my life, I mean, I loved my home growing up, but we had like those, I don't know, lawn chairs that were kind of webbed.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could have
the
a couch.
Woven nylon.
Yeah.
They make those impressions on the back of your thighs.
Oh, yeah.
When you
your
stand
thighs.
Up.
And that
yeah.
was our outdoor furniture. So the mm-hmm. fact that you could have like a couch and some chairs and a table blew my mind. So
it was
I
very
loved
swanky.
That. I loved that. And I loved the front yard. Because that neighborhood, because we would see the neighborhood. We'd see the Kravitz's house. We'd see the driveway and their convertible in the driveway. And there were trees that were big. And when you grow up in a kind of tract subdivision where all the homes are like the one three doors down and they're newly built, so there's just new sod in your front yard, little sapling trees, a few bushes, nothing has matured yet. You can't climb a tree in my neighborhood growing up because you would have broken the tree. There were no branches or anything.
Just bent all the way to the ground.
Yeah. Like a tree swing. What is that? Like all of those things could not have happened where I grew up. But this home, it had all of that mature landscaping. It just felt like a place that I wanted to open the front door and say, I'm home. And I would do it today. Funny? I loved
it. It's like so much of what we like is what we didn't have.
Yeah.
Isn't that
true?
Interesting? It's often the opposite of what we had.
Mm-hmm. And so that is my favorite home.
I love it.
What is yours, Kristen? I love it.
So when I moved to Minnesota in 1975, one of the first things that my dad did when we arrived was drive us by 2104 Kenwood Parkway, which is the Mary Tyler Moore House.
Who can turn the world on with her smile?
And that's somebody's actual address. Somebody lives there right now, and I just advertised it to all of podcast land, all of the peoples out there. But it doesn't matter because it's such a well-known address. All you have to do is Google Mary Tyler Moore House, and 2104 Kenwood Parkway comes up. So I've revealed nobody's secrets. But it's a big, beautiful Victorian house that was built in the late 1800s. It's on one of the most beautiful streets in one of the most beautiful neighborhoods in the city of Minneapolis, just a mile or so from my house right now. And I can drive by it anytime I want. And I do. I do it all the time.
Those of you who are Patreon supporters, thank you so much, by the way. And we're so excited about some of the bonus content that we're starting to put on Patreon. And one of them is going to be our little field trip to that very house where we have some fun pictures and videos available for our Patreon supporters.
God, now we got to do it.
Yeah.
Who's going to make me do that?
That's why I said it. You guys, how have we not done it? Yeah. We've got to do it.
I know.
We got to wear our berets.
It's winter
we
right
need
now.
To all wear our berets.
Right.
Well, I know.
Our
but
little
it's,
tans.
It's like 30. We'll find a day that it's like 30.
It's got to look good in the pictures, though. So it's not that I don't want to go outside. You've got to make sure it shows up. So I drive by all the time. Even when I'm not in the neighborhood, I'm like, I'm just going to turn right here instead of left and go by Mary's house. I do it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Whenever we have company from out of town, I mean, that is a stop, never fails. That's one of the places we take them.
Yep. And watch their jaws drop.
Yep.
So here's what the producers of the show wrote in the script outline after the location scouts found 2104 Kenwood Parkway. They said, this is in the script outline, a room, actually an entire apartment, a single large room. There are some, mostly of the working girl variety, who would consider this a great find. 10-foot ceilings, pegged wood floors, a wood-burning fireplace, and, most important, a fantastic ceiling-height corner window. Right now the room is totally empty, but it won't be for long. It will be the main setting for the Mary Tyler Moore Show, so God bless it.
Oh, I just got the chills.
I know, I did too, and it's so like the cute. Fourth time I've read it. Isn't that great?
Yes.
And here it is, and we can go look at it. So Mary's fictional address is 117 North Weatherly, Apartment D. And you guys want to know what I did last night?
What'd you do?
I bought brass letters that say Apartment D, and I bought them, and I'm going to put them on my attic door.
Oh,
Mike
that's
doesn't know
cute.
Yet. Don't tell
that's
him.
That's cute.
This is what happens when you're up researching for an episode late at night and you're like, I think I need some letters on my attic door that say Apartment D. Really, my attic is much more like Rhoda's apartment than Mary's, but it's the spirit of Apartment D that I want up here in my attic.
Yes.
When I graduated from college, I went apartment hunting with my roommate and we found an apartment that we called the Mary Tyler Moore apartment. It just stole our hearts. And it was just a few blocks away from the actual Mary Tyler Moore house, although on the sketchier side of the neighborhood, we were totally in love and we wanted to live there and be Mary and Rhoda. But we were also trying to be good adults. This was our first act of adulting. We were getting our new apartment and we really wanted to make practical decisions and show our parents that we could make good decisions, not decisions based on TV shows from our childhood. And so we
passed on the Mary Tyler Moore apartment because the rent didn't include heat. And we calculated that would be like $60 a month, maybe, divided by two. And so we thought the practical decision would be to go with the Good Times apartment and not the Mary Tyler Moore apartment. And I have been kicking myself ever since. I cannot believe we didn't take the Mary Tyler Moore apartment. So in the past, some owners, you know, because people live there at 2104 Kenwood Parkway. In the past, the people who have lived there have been pretty cool with people driving by and taking pictures, but some not so much. Because back in the heyday, there were busloads of people that would come by every single day and they would all unload and take pictures of the house. They would walk on the lawn. They would look in the windows. They'd ring the doorbell and ask if Mary was home. Oh, it was really bad. And so some people were not. Not Michelle. Or the person who walked up to a random person's home in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn to get her picture taken when it did not, in fact, involve the Cosbys. So in the early 70s, when this was happening, the Mary Tyler Moore Show was coming back to Minneapolis to shoot some more exterior shots of the home. And the person who owned the home famously put up a giant banner across the front of the house that said, "Impeach Nixon," so that they couldn't film any shots there. And that is when Mary moved to her high-rise apartment in downtown Minneapolis.
Is that why?
Yeah, that's why, because they couldn't get any outdoor shots. I also drive by that apartment all the time, too.
Couldn't they have just used old outside shots?
You would think. Yeah, you would think. But then she moves to her dirty apartment in the city. It's supposed to be really nice and modern, but I assure you right now it is not nice and modern.
No.
No. Mm-mm. Okay, so let's talk about the inside of the apartment a little bit, because that's also what we loved so much, right? When you look at the front of the house, Mary lived behind the big Palladian windows, Phyllis lived down below, and then Rhoda lived in the turret that is to the right. And it was a studio apartment, which as a kid I thought was so charming. I was like, why do we need all these rooms? You can have everything you want. You would never have to leave your room. It would be fantastic. And it was furnished with what was supposed to look like thrift store finds because, of course, Mary was newly single. She may have been living with her parents. We're not exactly sure. She was trying to make it on her own. And so she had to cobble together some pieces. So in particular, the oak dining table and the upholstered chairs are supposed to look sort of thrifty, like she has some budgetary constraints. She had a sunken living room that is where she slept. On the pull-out couch, and you step down into the living room via two steps that were flanked by bookshelves. So essentially, your bookshelves were on the ground. Oh, my God. And then her stereo sat on the ledge of the sunken living room, which would have been the floor for the rest of the apartment. So you have everything you need right there in your sunken living room with your books, and you've got your music, and you can reach it all from your bed. It was just too good to be true. So her kitchen was behind a sliding screen that looked like stained glass and it pulled down like a roll top desk. And she had a fridge that fit under the counter. So she had to bend down to get things out of her fridge. That was so exciting to me because everyone knows that things are much cuter when they're tiny. So this tiny fridge was really exciting.
You guys, every time she came home from, this happens all the time in so many episodes, she comes home, she comes in and she's carrying two bags of groceries and they always, stuff's coming out the top, like you can see the tops of carrots or a thing of bread or, and she can barely carry them because, you know, they didn't have grocery bags with handles and she sits them
why
down. Not,
why didn't, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but why didn't they have handles? Why did she have so long to figure out handles?
Never. Yeah. But all I was ever thinking was, where's she going to put all that?
As a child,
no pantry. No, I have no idea. I don't even have a memory of watching Mary Tyler Moore as a child. All my memories of watching Mary Tyler Moore are from when I was in like college and up. But where is she going to put all that? That's a very practical question.
You can't fit two bags of groceries in that tiny fridge.
Well, there's not even a because if she, you know, you'd see her open cabinet doors to get out like some cups and some plates. So that's not where she keeps her food
and the booze. There was booze in there. In that cupboard. So there's no room for food.
That's these are the things that I think of when I watch
television. I thought of watching that growing up and still think of now, I get very uncomfortable that there wasn't some kind of banister by those steps that go down.
It's dangerous.
It is very dangerous. And carrying those two heavy bags of groceries, too. Like, you could take a tumble.
Right.
Yeah, sure I could, didn't. Yeah. That made
but
me
you
very...
can't make a ban. You, how the banister would be like 12 inches long.
I know, but you still what were you gonna balance on if you needed to get your balance and really twist an ankle.
Do you guys remember the cookie jar that was on her counter? Mm-hmm. So there's a cookie jar that is shaped like a pumpkin, and apparently this is very popular with the internets. People love the pumpkin cookie jar. Did you know that the cookie jar was actually full of real cookies?
No. Oh, well, I bet I do know. I vaguely have a story.
Yeah. But they were always full of real cookies so that between scenes they could have a little snack.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Keep their blood sugar up.
That's right. You got to worry about that. Okay, so over by her door, there was the sweetest little vignette. It was a tiny little table with a white electric typewriter on it that I want very badly. Mike, for Christmas, I want that white typewriter. Oh, one just passed,
so that's, yikes.
It takes him a while to listen to these episodes, so he might get it in time for next year. And then you would sit at the tiny little table on a little wicker stool, and you would type your letters. And then when you were done, you would reach into a tiny cabinet that hung on the wall, and you pull out a tiny drawer, and that's where you get your stamp.
Yes, I love the stamp drawer.
It was so cute. And we know this from the time that Lou Grant came over drunk and somehow needed to write a letter, and he sat on that tiny wicker stool and typed out his letter, and Mary got him a stamp. Wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Oh, was
it? It was to his wife, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was.
I was trying so hard to remember what that was. And he looked so funny balancing on that tiny stool. Mm-hmm. He's like an elephant sitting in a school desk or something at his tiny little desk. So then to the left of her amazing arched floor-to-ceiling windows is her closet / bathroom. How much were you dying to go through that door?
Always.
And mm-hmm. see her bathroom.
It never got to see her bathroom. To me, though, that she had that big of a closet, like a walk-through, walk-in closet and bathroom, but no bedroom. Because I used to always think, why couldn't you just, like, sleep in that closet? Like, well, you could take that cot in there.
Yes.
I thought that same
thing. Do you really have that many clothes? The balance did not work
Again,
out
these are the things we're thinking of. Yeah. And it really wouldn't have worked well for the television show they were shooting. I mean, it just, you needed Mary to sleep out there in the big open space where the cameras could fit. And they didn't need to, you know, construct a little tiny set that looked like her closet.
Well, and these were the days when we all had the one closet with the bifold doors, right? That's the era in which we're living. And so the idea that she had a closet that she could walk into was unheard of. Again, why wouldn't you just put your bed in there? So, no, we never got to see the bathroom, and that drove everybody crazy. And then last but not least, I saved the very best for last, the most famous part of Mary's apartment is the letter M on the wall. It's the M that inspired an entire generation of people to put initials on their wall, including me.
And me.
Did you have one too?
Oh, gosh. Well, mine... It wasn't wood, though. It was kind of cork, so it could also be a bulletin board. But I have a picture of it. And, I mean, the only reason I ever – well, I mean, of course you have to have an initial on your wall. That's like –
Of course you do. Yes, of course you do.
Yes.
I got mine for my birthday from my friend Kristen, and her father made it for me in his wood shop.
Oh, wow.
I have a handmade K. And now that I'm thinking about it, it's in a box somewhere. I'm going to get that out and put it in my attic that says Apartment D.
I think you need to.
I'm going
to
do it.
You need a drawer for stamps,
okay, so that – I need a little place for stamps. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we can teach, we can have a whole like a webinar for children on where to put the stamp. Set designers, I need to tell you about that letter M. The set designers had a very specific purpose for that M. That M is there for a reason. And that is to signify that that apartment is hers and hers alone. She doesn't share it with anyone else. She takes full ownership of it and responsibility for it.
Wow. They really think through stuff, don't they, those set designers?
Independent woman making it
on
her own.
She really is. So I've not given up on my Mary Tyler Moore house dreams yet. So right now it's a 9,000 square foot house with 7 bedrooms and 5 bathrooms. But long ago it was divided into condos. And this is my retirement dream. I want somebody to go back and turn it into condos again. And this is where I will live out my golden years. And Mike can take the turret apartment and be my Rhoda.
Well, I think we have the makings of a new HGTV series, don't we?
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Next time it's for sale.
Yes. I agree.
Because it takes forever whenever that place goes on sale. It's on the market for a long time.
It's news. Every time it goes on the market, it's big news.
It is.
And the last time it sold in 2017 for $1.5 million, which is half of what it was on the market for 10 years prior. So somebody bought it for $3 million and sold it for $1.5 million.
Oh, that was, what a bummer. Well, Michelle, where are you going to take us? Where are we going to visit you and your
favorite
house?
We're going to go to Ohio.
Oh, I forgot they lived in Ohio.
We're going to go to Ohio.
Yay.
You guys, seriously, this was a near impossible task for me to pick one TV home. And honestly, I feel like I'm still wavering. But no, I feel really good about my choice. I was going between like four TV homes. So I want to tell you how I came to my decision of which one to pick and share really quickly. So instead of picking a TV home because I was in love with its decor and vibe and felt like I could happily move in there today, like with it looking as is, like Dick Van Dyke's living room or the gorgeous colonial exterior of the Bradford's home or Kate and Allie's cozy basement New York apartment, I'm picking the TV home of probably my favorite TV family. And I know that wasn't necessarily the purpose of this little exercise, but let me explain. While I don't particularly love the decor of this home today or feel like I want to move right into it today, I did love it in the 80s. And I still get a feeling every time I picture it or see a photo of it. I get a feeling of warmth, a feeling of happiness, and a feeling of family. And that's why I'm choosing the home from Family Ties.
I bet we've been together for a million years.
I bet we'll be together for a million more.
So we never saw the exterior of the Keaton's home, but we spent almost all our time in the living room and in the kitchen. And the kitchen was my very favorite room in that house. I don't know if you guys can remember, but it had a really big island with a bulletin board and a Kiss the Cook sign that was kind of hanging lower. I loved the floating shelves, which I think you didn't see a lot of in the early 80s. And so all their dishes and glasses were on floating shelves. So you could see they had the little orange juice glasses with the oranges on them that I love.
Oh, yeah, they did.
They had a water
cooler.
They did
drink a lot of orange juice.
They did, and milk, yes. And they had, and I like, in an episode I was just recently watching, they pour the milk out of a pitcher. Like, obviously, when they get their milk, then they pour it into a pitcher, and then they... another thing I loved about it is I loved that they kept their cereal. Do you guys remember that their cereal was always in those tall Tupperware containers, which I thought were the coolest things. I wanted all my cereal in Tupperware containers. They had that standalone water cooler by the back door. They had a walk-in pantry back there. The kitchen was just full of plants with ivy everywhere. They had shelves above, like really high, like an open shelf above the back room with the French doors, which I loved, was the laundry room. And there's a shelf really high that they have a lot of like tchotchkes and like old mugs and stuff like that, but lots of plants with ivy and everything. They had that round table, you know, by the door that they all sat squashed on one side of, obviously, so we could see all of them. Elisa's drawing table was pushed over by the phone. She worked in the kitchen because it was such the epicenter of the home. And then they had this giant commercial grade Wolf oven and stove. And behind it was this exposed brick wall. And it just almost looked like a restaurant over in that section of the kitchen, which I loved. And then the living room. Now, the living room was very 80s, and it was peppered with some serious Victorian flair, like the Tiffany lamp, which is iconic, an iconic Family Ties set piece. And I believe it's Tina Yothers, who played Jennifer, who has that currently. And then there's that yellow camelback Victorian sofa. And it was really kind of small and cluttered, but I feel like it was just so warm and it just totally reflected that family. You know, every wall in that house has frames, like collages of frames. And, oh my gosh, the living room has that beautiful carved mantle, over the fireplace. And then behind that Victorian camelback sofa, there's a little alcove with a window seat that I don't remember ever seeing anyone use in that area of the living room. But one thing I did love is all the windows in that house are leaded glass. Even the front door has a leaded glass window. But you can see in that little alcove, almost looks like a leaded glass / stained glass type of situation going on. And then Alex's room, it looks like Alex's room might be like in a little turret. I can almost picture what the outside of that house looks like, even though we never saw it.
They never showed the exterior on that one?
One thing that always baffled me, though, and those of you that are Big Family Ties fans listening, please let me know if you know the answer to this. Why was there a full-on table and chairs for four in the entryway? The answer I know that you might be saying, well, because they sat at it sometimes. Of course they did, but who has a table with four? It looked like it could have been like another table that went in a kitchen or something, and it was right in the entryway. And I have seen episodes recently where Stephen and Elise are sitting there and they're having cheese and crackers with some guests. And that's because, you know, Alex, Mallory, and Jennifer are in the living room. So obviously they all the actors in this scene can't fit in that tiny living room. So that's a purpose, but it just seems like an odd decor choice.
Well, because it was full size. It wasn't a table where you put your keys.
No,
it was a full size table.
Right. Well, and a lot of people that have bigger homes have big round tables in their entry that they might put a beautiful arrangement of flowers on or some picture frames.
House for that.
No. Yeah. Right. This is one. It's a small house. And two, it has four chairs around it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so because Family Ties and the Keatons were just so impactful for me in the early 80s, I mean, that was my show. I loved it. And so that home actually feels a little bit like home to me. Anyway, a fun fact, it was modeled after the Childhood Home of executive producer Gary David Goldberg, who very familiar name in sitcom history. And he only modeled that home after his, the commercial grade Wolf range and oven big contraption in the kitchen. He put that in there because he had one of those in his home, like at the time. And so he wanted that in there.
Yeah, those are all very purposeful choices. Like you're not going to put that oven and stove combination in a kitchen without having a reason to do so. Mm-hmm. And also, I think that house was very unique. So also, you wouldn't make those, you know, those Victorian things, the humpback couch. That's not what it is. The camelback couch. That's a very purposeful decision. That's not the kind of thing you saw on TV that often. So those are all, you know, there's a reason for all of it.
That's right. Yeah. I think it helps us learn more about the character of the family. I mean, all of those choices tell us things that you don't have to spell out, but we get that vibe from. So, yeah, those are all excellent choices, ladies.
Thank you.
A thumbs up for those.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
And thanks to all of you for listening today and coming along with us into our favorite TV homes. Make sure to come back next week for part two of this fun conversation, when we'll share the favorite TV homes from our Instagram society, as well as talk to a graphic architect who designs unbelievable replicas of all of those homes we've been talking about and walks you through them on her YouTube channel.
Yeah, she is incredible. And it was so fun to talk with her. And as always, thank you for all your support and for sharing our podcast and page with others. If you'd like to take your support to the next level, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com and then just search for Pop Culture Preservation Society. You can help us keep this society trucking and get fun, exclusive perks in return. And this week, we would like to give a special thank you to patrons Gail, Melissa, Elizabeth, Dina, and Jennifer. The PCPS is honestly made possible by people like you.
Yes, they are. And now it's time for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To happy days.
To good times.
The Little House on the Prairie.
No. Cheers.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates, and though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.
Spread a little love and it will keep moving on.